power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
One. Deadline.
Episode 25. It's starting. It's happening.
Wow, I can't believe we're here again.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Episode 25 of Diplomacy Cast.
It's a Diplomacy Cast about the board game Diplomacy.
You see, no, just let me do my thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a podcast
about
board game Diplomacy. All right, that's all I had, really. In this episode...
Thank God you corrected me.
We have one awesome topic, and it's just going to do the trick.
Like, yeah, no, this is a good one.
We're not even going to mess around with email. We're not going to mess around with anything. We're just going to bring you a really cool topic that...
I mean, there's going to be less bumpers, so that sucks.
Yeah, yeah. Unless you're our editor.
True,
that's,
fair,
that's
fair.
Five extra minutes you can spend doing something else. Yeah.
Fair.
You're
welcome, producer.
That topic is... Well, God, I don't even know. Do we have a name for it? We're going to talk about... the great types of players we know, the people with long tournament success. We're not going to name any names.
Oh, no.
We're just going to... we're almost talking about archetypes of
archetypes
of
is a good word. Yeah. I was going to say categories, but I think archetypes
categories,
is better.
Archetypes.
There's just types of players.
And how they try and do you.
Yeah, and so... And they have tells, and they have approaches, and they have ways of doing things.
Yeah.
We're going to let you in on that.
The inspiration for this came, well, partially from an idea we were kicking around, and then partially from Matt Shields, who said, hey, you know what you ought to do is do an episode about the ways people will try and take advantage of you at your first tournament.
And then we took that idea and made it way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he can have his own podcast. And
sure.
Fine too.
Yeah, you can step right up to the microphone if you'd like.
So, we're going to put one bumper in here for no particular reason.
If you we should.
Any questions, any feedback, send it to us, press@diplomacycast.com. That's press@diplomacycast.com.
That's P-R-E-S-S, because yeah. I think a lot of people have even misspelling it with putting that, like, French E on the end.
Oh,
so,
weird.
Yeah,
like
just
press.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, no. Just P-R-E-S-S.
And we have a Facebook.
Yeah, we do.
Facebook.com/diplomacycast. Find us there, too.
Yep.
Enjoy our show very much after this.
Big plays.
Power plays. Power plays.
Okay.
So there's... the way we were going to approach this is there's a bunch of broad categories. And I'm not sure, we haven't really discussed this, but I think let's just talk about the five categories and then just break
five,
them down.
Okay.
Well, let's just say five for right now. It might have, you know. So
we sort of went through a list of all of the awesome tournament players that we know and sort of tried to throw them into, you know, a few of them are just one of these things.
Sure.
A few of them are sort of a combo of a couple of these things. And once we were satisfied that we'd thought of all of the tournament players that we could think of that were really good and they fit in one of these categories or multiple of these categories, then we decided we were done with the list.
And so the game for all of you listeners will be to figure out who's in what category.
Yeah.
So good luck, guys.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word, the first category is sort of a... Do we want to say bully?
Sure.
Let's just say intimidating. Someone
bully's
who's
fine.
Bully, not in a mean way, but
not
in a sort of an aggressive way.
Yeah.
Is a cat just a way of interacting? The second one is someone that is a strategist, someone that has a grand strategy. The third is someone that plays on their reputation within.
We have to make up a word for that one. We're saying reputationist.
Reputationist, which seems like they should have a sword, but you know,
and this in Dragon Magazine issue.
Sure,
27.
Exactly. It's a new class of fighter.
Yeah.
Then there's sort of like a con artist / fast talker.
Yep.
And then finally, there's a sort of a charismatic type. Who's just playing on being really fun? Is that about right?
Is that
what we're talking about?
Yeah, those are basically what, and specifically these are things that we think have the ability to dazzle players who aren't as experienced at the game, and you won't just find them at tournaments.
Exactly.
A lot of times, if you have like a regular group in your house game kind of thing, people will sort of start, the good players will start evolving into one of these, and there are good players, I suppose, who are probably none of these or don't really seem to fit when you first think about it. But we were specifically looking for like ways that people get good at the game, diplomatically speaking, and in a way that is really, when you're newer to the game, they can pick on you with it. You know, not
absolutely. And another way of saying this is, and I completely agree with what Eric's saying, if you're given a large enough group of people, you're going to be able to categorize diplomacy players into one of these categories. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to say, oh, this person is somewhat of this and a little bit of that.
Yep.
And, you know, having done a lot of this, reflecting back on my days of, you know, not just tournaments, but just house games and informal gatherings, these archetypes come up, and they're pretty, I don't want to say they're basic, but there's some definitely human elements to them that are trading on some pretty basic stuff. And you're going to be able to pick these people out, and hopefully what we're going to be able to do is arm you with a strategy to diffuse that, or at least deal with it in a way that is most effective.
Don't let yourself get too badly exploited by it, or alternatively, how to actually work with them as allies. We're going to try and touch on that a little bit too, because that...
let's be clear. We're not saying that, you know, you see, if you identify one of these archetypes, you're like, oh, I can't work with them. That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying... you need to be able to work with these archetypes because they're out there and understand what motivates and how best to deal with it.
Okay, so play along at home, tournament players.
Yes.
Try and figure out what we're talking about here. We're never going to say, but you can probably guess.
Maybe.
So the order we had them in, let's just
start with...
The bully.
The bully.
Yeah.
And I will again say, bully just has this negative connotation to it that I don't particularly like, but...
some are more negative than others.
Right. And I want to say there's a huge spectrum here.
Mm-hmm.
This is from people that are just, they come out of the gate and they say, like, you are never moving to Galatia, and if you move to Galatia, we're at war forever.
Yeah, that would be a bad job of being that guy.
Right, that is extreme.
Remember that this guy has figured out how to use it to his advantage. He can't do it all the time if he just starts screaming like a maniac at you from turn one.
That's not going to work.
But there could be that guy, but he's not going to be a good player. What he does know how to do is sort of use a little bit of fear in his negotiations with you. If you know, he'll make it clear to you early on that these are the rules, and if you want to work with him, you got to play by those rules at least a little bit. Or if you want to be his neighbor, you got to play by those rules at least a little bit. And this guy will... some bullies more than others will save it, you know, be quiet, 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 and then something they don't like, and then they just let it go all at once. And that's when it's at its most effective, in my opinion.
Right. Right, I mean, there are people that are aggressive all the time. It's less effective for, because, you know, people will just get turned off by it, and they're like, I don't have to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
But there are others who are like, you deviate, and their answer to that is to just pound you.
Yeah.
Like, bang, 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 over and over, like, pull you aside and just dress you down.
Yep, doesn't necessarily have to be yelling, but often it is. You know, often it's a raised voice. It can be a quiet, but like staring you right in the eye, and you know that you're in a lot of trouble. Kind of a thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could be a dad sort of talking down to you, a motherly sort of like, you've messed up here.
Yeah,
sort of a thing.
Yeah, but their goal is, anytime one of the pieces on the board doesn't move where they wanted it to move, they want to use fear.
Right.
They want you to go, oh crap, I don't like it when this guy yells at me or takes it out on me, or just unloads on me in one way or another. And it can work. And
it can work really well, because you get it in a situation where you don't have a lot of other options. Like, mm-hmm. ideally, you've been boxed in such, like, you've gone down a road far enough that changing horses at that point is really not appealing. It's work.
Right.
And, you know, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah. What used to happen to me, I think, is that when I was new and still learning the game, if I were to play with a player like this, they'd have this way of making me like it, like, you know, they'd just unload on me, not about how I was a bad person or an idiot or something, about how I'd made a terrible mistake. I was doing something that was bad for my own long-term future in the game, or bad for the board, or this or that.
Yeah.
When really it was just bad for them. And I would fall for that. They would say, you know, like, if you keep attacking me here, then France on the other side of the board is going to get huge, and he's going to solo, and it's going to be all you. And yeah, and like, you've got to stop doing this. You're playing like ridiculously, and all this stuff. And that would, I'd go, oh,
he's got a good point.
Maybe I just don't know enough about the game to realize that I have made a terrible mistake by attacking. Or like, I'd do something like, I'd think it was like a pretty clever little stab on the bully, and then he'd just let me hear about how, boy, you've just done something like bad for you, bad for me, bad for our future, bad for the board. And eventually I'd be like, shit,
I'll retreat.
Yeah, exactly. I'll retreat, which was usually worse than anything at all.
Almost always.
And then, cause then you have to hear from the bully for hours after the game about, boy, if you just hadn't stabbed us, then
all that momentum was absolutely lost. I mean, yeah. We did okay, but it wasn't as, and so you will, this is, of all everyone we're going to talk about, this is the most easy to identify, mm-hmm. because it has, you'll have a internal reaction to it, and you'll know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all know this. We all had parents. We all had people in our lives who does this. You, so easy to identify. You'll also note that it's not the majority of the time you interact with people. Most people do not talk to you like this.
Yeah.
And so...
That's true. That's a part of what they're doing, is they're in sort of an environment where, you know, like, it doesn't happen to you on the street. It doesn't happen to you at work. It doesn't happen to you in diplomacy all the time. Yeah, exactly.
It's less than 50%.
They're taking advantage of this sort of environment where, like, people do sort of socially strange things in order to, like, really jar you into doing what it is that they want you to do. So, yeah.
So
go ahead.
You want to... Once you identify that feeling, because you will, and like Eric was saying, and I've certainly been in the same place, you're like, oh, crap, I have messed up. And you look at it superficially, you're like, oh, I have really messed this up, and this, oh, I'm going to retreat or something. So when you're in that position, the first thing you need to do is, as quickly as possible, cut off that conversation.
Yeah.
Just say, I walk away, say, okay, I really need to think about this. Pretend to be flustered. Pretend to be totally intimidated. Or maybe you are totally intimidated. Right. Just go with it.
You might not have to pretend.
Right. Just go with it and don't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Go right to the board and really look at the board.
Yeah.
And really look at, take what was just said to you and apply it to the board as much as possible. Put some distance in and really try and take apart what's being said to you. I think Eric is entirely correct. 8 times out of 10... probably what's being said is in completely to the advantage of the bully and not an advantage to the rest of the board.
Right.
So that I think is the best strategy, and I defer to Eric to see, do you have a better strategy to deal with that?
No, that's a good way to deal with it if you've gotten on the bully's bad side. Another thing that comes to mind is get the bully mad at someone else.
That's an advanced move. That's very judo.
Yeah,
it's very like use the force and apply it elsewhere.
Yes, a lot of bullies after a certain amount of being angry just don't want to be angry anymore. And if you turned out to be the guy that didn't piss them off when everybody else did piss them off, you may well be the guy that they just throw all their dots to.
Right,
in a huff.
Right, and so that's, yeah, it's absolutely important.
And you can even be, like, just sort of a tricky jerk and just be like, hey, bully guy, did you hear what Nathan just said about you? You know, like, that stuff can work if you're really the crafty type. You can just make stuff up to get the bully mad at other people. Like, you know, like, he told me he was going to stab you. It's a great line.
Absolutely. Like, I completely agree that this was a terrible thing to have done. I totally understand why you're so mad at me. However, like, seriously, everyone was coming at you, and this guy really orchestrated all this, and I really feel like we should mean
more. Yeah, I kind of meant more, like, before he's ever aimed his anger at you.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, but sometimes you don't know.
You don't know.
You haven't identified
you don't know the archetype yet. Right.
Once you have, there's a deflection.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great strategy. And I think what you're talking about is, oh, I know this person. I've played a bunch of games with them. This is going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I completely agree with you. Like, that's absolutely the way to go.
Exactly.
Let's try to set that up. So does that...
Yeah.
Have we... Because I think what you're talking about is a little more advanced.
Yeah. And the one other thing I wanted to touch on was, what if, for whatever reason, you actually want to be the bully's ally? This isn't, like, out of the question, you know? Any number of game reasons. You know, because, again, a bully isn't always a real bully. Like, sometimes they're a nice guy, and they just turn bully when somebody makes them mad.
It doesn't make them... something doesn't work out.
And sometimes, you know, like, having an angry guy on your side who's just, like, sort of, like, making everyone else's life miserable. It deflects a lot from you.
Yeah, you're just surfing on that.
If you want to do that... I don't know. They're typically pretty aggressive players. Not always, but I'd say typically also your bully type is a type that you don't want to leave too many dots uncovered.
Oh, absolutely.
Unless maybe, like, you can make it sufficiently fun. Like, I think maybe the way to stay on their good side is to just be, like, the sort of person they could never be mad at. Like, from the very beginning.
Okay.
Like, and tell me if this drives.
I want to hear you flesh this idea out first.
If you decide you want to work with the bully, what you want to do probably is just be nice. And you should do that with everyone. Be kind of almost like the words coming to mind is like ingratiating. Just be like, okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, it'll be fun, you know. Hey, cool. And like, just make it so that, like, even if you do some sort of, like, thing they're not going to like later, you're fun enough about it that you're like, ah, ha, ha, I gotcha. Like, sometimes that can sort of stop it before it starts.
Well, that's only going to work once. Maybe twice.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying, like, when you really stick it in, like, if you're really, you know, totally stab them, they're going to go berserk on you, and there's just nothing you can do about that. Like, but I just mean, like, you can sort of manage that personality a little bit by just not taking anything too seriously. Because what they're going to feed on and what they're going to look for the opportunity to do is make you think that you've done something seriously, seriously screwed up whenever you do something they don't like. And if they feel like they can't really pin you down on that, and you'll just go, whatever, you know, we're all having fun here. It's going to
take the teeth out of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be like, I'm already letting you know through my personality in advance that when you blow up on me, it's not really going to be that big a deal, and you're going to feel kind of like a jerk for doing it.
Right.
That's one thing that occurs to me, is if you do want to work with them, like, if you do want to manage them, that and cover your dots.
Cover your dots!
Yeah, and give them one every once in a while if you think you can afford it and they're about to become angry just with be you, like, I suppose. Like,
so, hopefully that helps you with that archetype. Yeah. The next one, I think, is there's a little bit of this in, I would say, the majority of players.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people that really focus on the strategy. They have a grand plan. They're the Machiavellis, they're the Napoleons, they're the people that they sat down on the table, they read the board, maybe it's 01, follow 01, spring 01. They're like, okay, this is how we do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to you with nearly a fully formed plan.
Yep.
Now,
and they may well come to all three of your neighbors with a totally different, fully formed plan.
Absolutely.
Just picking out which one. Yeah.
But they're all about the big picture. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we're going to do this, then we're going to do this, then we're going to do this. It feels very incremental. It's very planned. It's very logical. And
yeah, they always stick in my mind as the people early on in my tournament life that I would play against and just be like, God, he never makes a mistake.
Right.
Ever. It's like, so just like, you end up on the wrong side of them and you just know that you've got
a
chance.
Especially if it works out, like, and the plan that they explained to you earlier that you didn't take unfolds perfectly. It's particularly infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
That'll happen. But they're just very big picture, and they seem very, like, in control.
Yeah.
and very, like, reasonable.
Yeah, physically, they'll appear confident. Almost absolutely. That's part of their game, for sure, is just, like, I'm the general here, and I'm just right. sort of inspecting my troops, being all my neighbors, kind of, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this type of player is a great, I mean, I will say, is it can be a really great ally.
Sure.
But you can't deviate from the plan.
True.
Because there is a plan.
True.
And when you deviate,
you're no longer useful.
You are no longer conscripted in the Grand Army.
Yeah.
And so you have to be wary of that, and you have to try and figure out, and this, I guess I should say this out, you know, explicitly, you're not part of the end game.
Correct.
The grand strategy does not involve you.
Yeah.
That's the key point, no matter how reasonable it sounds.
And these people really do solo.
Probably
more than any of the other archetypes we're going to talk about, the people
I would say
just sort of come at it cold and crafty. You
right,
know,
and it's, this is how it's going to work. And so...
And you look over at that other board over there in the tournament, and you're like, oh my god, he's at solo again.
He's at 15? Great. Oh, super. Nice to have 5. Fantastic.
It's because he never makes mistakes. Okay.
And so, you need to be on your ball about this one, because strap in, and your challenge will be to see when the turning point is.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple of years probably is going to work out for you, because the only way the strategist succeeds is if he makes it sweet enough for you.
Yeah, he has to have an ally. Even he has to have an ally.
Exactly. No grand strategist can do it on his own. Mm-hmm. Like Napoleon proved that. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't do. You can't go solo. So it's going to be sweet, and you just have to go. Like, and this is why it's a great ally for, especially in the first mm-hmm. couple of years. But you have to anticipate one or two moves ahead.
Yeah,
and if not, and I don't want, you know, should I say as many as 3, like a year and a half ahead? Because your strategist,
the more the better.
The strategist is thinking that far ahead.
The more the better.
He's already planned where he's going to stab you.
Mm-hmm.
He knows where it's going to be. He's setting up to do it. And it's, if you're a player that is thinking like, oh, just let's see, I hear this all the time, oh, I want to see what the board looks like.
Right.
He doesn't need to see what the board looks
right.
like. He knows what the board's going to look like.
And by the way, this player picks his targets by evaluating who he thinks the weak spots are, probably more than any of the other ones. He'll pick, if he gets the idea that you're going to make a mistake or you can't be counted on to do the plan or whatever,
you're
going to be the target. Yeah. And so part of dealing with that is to just be able to engage seriously in what the plan is. Even sometimes have a counter proposal, you know, because his plan's always going to favor him just a little bit more than it's going to favor you, of course. And that's probably the thing to be the most vigilant of when you're dealing with this player, is that even if it is working out well in the short term, like you're working with him, they've got you guys have some other target, he's the one that's going to just have it lined up that all the pieces just so happen to fall in such a way.
Just,
oh my gosh, I grew 2 and you didn't grow this turn.
Wow, I didn't even see that coming.
Yeah,
weird.
So it's probably the hardest for me, I'd say, to deal with, just because I kind of count on other people to make mistakes sometimes,
right.
and could, like, whenever there's chaos, I'm happy. Just ask Eddie Persong, he'll tell you stuff. Like, whenever there's chaos, then there's something where you can go, oh, okay, now we can do this.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, now we can do that. And the strategist just
minimal chaos
prevents chaos. And yeah, exactly.
And I think you're touching on how to deal with this particular archetype
mm-hmm.
as best as possible. And I think Eric is right. It's one of the more challenging. But you need to be able to engage the strategist on a level, at least mm-hmm. a parity level. You need to have discussions with this person such that they treat you at least as an equal or a peer.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're the meat.
Even if you're full of crap.
Yeah, absolutely. But you need to be able to discuss it in a way that's cogent, like plausible. Like, I understand, strategist, what you're saying. Let me feed it back to you and tell you my tweak on it.
Right.
Let me just show you I understand.
Yep.
Because if you do not, that's part of the game.
Yep.
Like, the strategist is evaluating each and every person he talks to and says, Yes, yes, no, yes, no. Right. Those are the easy targets. That's the pathway. And that's going to form the strategy.
Yep.
So you need to be able to, and they're really easy to spot. You know, they're going to, like I said, they're going to be talking about a grand scheme pretty early.
Right.
Once you identify that, you need to be able to engage that way, or you're the target, and he's going to find somebody else that can engage that way and roll.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And if you do want this person as an ally, again, I'd say the most important thing is, like, and it can be great to have them as an ally because they'll see moves you didn't.
Yeah,
you know,
like, absolutely.
They'll go, oh, okay, we're trying to take this guy down, and I do have an ally, and it's you, and so. What we should really do is convoy you to Tuscany right now, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, we should convoy you to Tuscany. Let's do that. But so there's a lot of times when it can be great to work with that person, like especially like if just the board seems like it's going to just sort of be like a crazy, zany,
a great time to do it.
Sanctimonious place. Like if you can just be like, hey, strategy guy. You and me are the only sane people on this this clown car. Let's just go.
Right.
And like you don't have to make a big pitch or anything. You can just say, we can roll this board right now. And if they see that that's the case, then you can just do it. And
that's great.
It's so nice because then you can spend all this extra time on diplomacy and then just get with your strategist ally for like 1 minute and just be like, okay, so we're going here. Yep. We're going here. Okay.
Talk to this guy. Let's do it.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Yep.
And the only danger in what Eric just said, and I completely agree with, is don't, just because a move is brilliant, look two moves beyond.
Yeah.
Because the strategist is always looking to put you out of place.
And that's what I was going to say, is that it's... You're not, like what Nathan said earlier, you're not part of the long-term plan.
Yeah.
And so... All you got to do is don't get complacent in checking why does he want to do it this way.
Because there's always a reason.
The answer isn't always because it's brilliant for taking down this third guy. It can also be because, oh, then my piece will be in this handy location to stab Nathan next turn.
Right.
And don't be afraid to call him on it either. Do it calmly. You know, don't be like, you're trying to stab me, I'm freaking out. Oh, but just be like, I'd feel better if you were there instead, and then they might have some reason that that's not the case, and you need to be able to kind of take them on that, you know?
Right.
Like, you really don't need to be in Galatia after this turn. How about you make Galatia the mover instead? I'd feel a lot better about that.
Right.
And if they can't come up with, like, a logical rebuttal, usually they'll just be like, okay.
Right, because you know, the key is to be able to engage on that level.
Then you've outplayed them. Then you've just said...
And they'll respect that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they'll try and come up with another plan a little while later to try and get the stab. So
right.
that's sort of the double-edged sword about working with the strategist guy. But I mean, for my style particularly, like they're the enemies I hate the most and the allies sometimes that I love the most because like sometimes they'll be relieved to have me as their ally because they can just sit there and look at the board and figure out what the best thing for the alliance to do is, and I can go off and sow chaos and just F with people all over the rest of the board and then come back and just be like, okay, I think I've talked Italy into stabbing Austria now, and he'll be like, great.
Same plan then?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know.
So the next one is fairly common. This is a reputationist.
Sure.
Someone that is really trading on their reputation. And this doesn't matter whether it's the tournament scene or your local hobby scene or...
Yeah, frankly, every local hobby has someone that everyone knows is the best player there.
Or, because, you know, it's someone that is going to... Honestly, and I want to even expand this a little bit more. Someone that has gamed somebody else. Or I've beaten them before, or like is really trading on what they've done in games past and has succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't really about having a grand strategy. It's not really about intimidating people. It's about it's worked before. It's going to work this time.
Sure.
And that's the entire game.
Sure.
And there's going to be a little sprinkling of all of the archetypes we talk about in there. But the primary thing, the thing that they're going to mention all the time is, oh, no, your idea is great. My idea is better. Because right. X.
Because whatever I did it before and it totally worked.
And you know I did it before.
Yeah.
That's the key. Like, you have to be, like, yeah. The person he's talking to knows, has some knowledge that they've done it before. Because this doesn't work if, you know, like, it doesn't work if, like, a brand new player is like, oh, who the hell are you?
Mm-hmm.
But this is just a player that really trades on that. And I'll say it works fairly well.
Yeah.
Because it's congenial, it's fine, but it's also, at its bottom, it's, you can't argue with it.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, they're just like, I know best because I know best because I know best.
Right, and you can't really say, and, well, I know best, and they can just say, no, demonstrably, you are not, you don't know.
Yeah.
So, I'm not really sure the best way of dealing with that. I think it's going
to
be...
You can ignore it, I suppose, is the best way to deal with it. You know, you can just say, okay, what's your plan this time? And just, like, take any plan on the merits and kind of tackle it. Like,
and I think the reason we want to put this in here is just because it's so common. Not that it's so difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
You just need to ignore it. I think you're right. Like, that's the best thing to... Or play on it. Just be like, yep, I've hooked up with All-Star here. I've hooked up with the best player in this, whatever. And you can just trade on it. You're like, yeah, third party. I could do that. Well, but, you know, I'm with Superstar here. And
another... I guess I hadn't really been thinking about this initially, but another thing you can do is you can aim the board at them.
Oh, that's a reverse thing, yeah.
They're clearly the biggest danger on the board. You could just say, we can't let blah, blah, blah get big.
Yeah, he wins everything.
Yeah.
She wins everything every time she's on a board.
Yep.
That is actually definitely something to do. It doesn't really allow you to work. I mean, if you're a neighbor of someone who's trading on reputation, that doesn't really help you that much unless you can convince your other neighbor to just run in on him.
Right.
And there's something to be said.
And reputationists do get berserk openings at them from time to time.
They do. You know? But at the same time, they have a reputation for a reason.
Yeah.
And so it might make sense. Yeah,
they're probably... I guess maybe this isn't fair to, like, call it its own archetype, because if that's all you ever do, you're probably never going to get very good at them in the first place. They probably did it some other way, and now they use that.
I guess that's right. I guess we should... I think we only wanted to identify this as something... It's just something we see a lot.
Yeah.
That people just fall back on when they don't have anything else.
And people pick on newbies with it. You know, they
absolutely.
Like, when the board arrives at the table and everyone's like, oh, great, we have Nathan Barnes in Italy. That guy's super good at this game. And Nathan's like, modest comment. I'm not really, but you kind of know he knows he's good or whatever. Not actually Nathan, but whatever.
Like, well, it's not going to be me, but yeah, you know, no one ever says that.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe in like Dragonflight 10 years ago, like, oh, here's the good player.
Oh, watch out!
Yeah.
Here comes big money.
Yeah, exactly. But I completely lost
my head. You know, at the absurdity of, like, someone going, man, Nathan Barnes, that guy's a shark. He's amazing.
Yeah. But the point being, like, once that dynamic exists, it, like, if you're new... or new to a particular scene or something, you can be over-affected by it. Yes. And you shouldn't be. Like, when that person then comes and negotiates with you in 01, you should not get nervous because all of a sudden you're dealing with Mr. So-and-so. And they will kind of recognize that you are probably reacting to them that way if they're smart about it. And the people that we're talking about are the people that are smart about it. They're the people that know their reputation and they use it to their advantage. And so then they'll just walk in and say, hey, this is the best way to handle this situation. And then tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And
what they're saying may or may not be the most brilliant strategy. It may not be the best strategy. I mean, it also, at the same time, could be pretty decent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
These aren't... I would say this type of player isn't necessarily using it always to be nefarious. They're not trying to be underhanded about
Correct.
It. It's just a consistent fallback.
And I'd say that they have a better-than-average chance of assuming, like, let's say they're England. They'll probably assume that they get to pick between France and Germany for who's their first ally. the most of the time. You know, that like it, unless there's another reputationist over in the thing in that theater, they'll probably figure you have to impress them a little bit. And and with how generous you're going to be, and you don't necessarily, but maybe play that way a little bit
and to get them on your side. The other reason we wanted to bring this up is because this is a core of an issue that we've talked a lot about with email players and face to face players, reputation, or sometimes just people knowing of another person can be intimidating or can feel like you're being shut out if you don't know who's who, and that completely feeds into this archetype.
You cannot
assume just because people know somebody that they're going to fall for that. They're going to be like, this guy wins everything. And I think people get shunted into this place like, well, everyone knows Superstar here, so I'm out.
Yeah.
Don't fall for that. Just ignore that stuff and go with what seems to be for you the best thing for your current position.
Yeah, exactly. And if that turns out to be working with this guy, okay. And there's, you know, I don't know that there's even any sort of secret trick to working with this person.
No.
Well, I guess one thing just came to mind.
All right. Let's see.
You can kind of sell the you wise old veteran, you've probably worked with, you know, like Germany a million times because you've been at so many of these, but what I bet you've never done is killed him in one of these situations. You know, like you can kind of sell the like, let's try something different.
Yes, you could try it,
and it has some chance of working. I feel like
Well, I don't think anything's off the table with the reputationist.
Right, exactly. Maybe that adds to the glory. Like, ha ha ha, I got to kill other dangerous guys. So maybe like, if you're the new guy and nobody knows you, you can seduce that person with a, like, let's do something crazy and, you know, and be generous with it. Like, I'm France, you're England. The, like, player who's been around a while is Germany. What the hell? You get Belgium. Let's get you down there now. I mean, I know I'm making a big England out of a good player, but screw it. I want to do this.
Right.
You know, that's sort of the kind of thing that maybe could appeal.
Right. And I think there's a lot. The thing about this particular archetype is there's a broad range of things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's much more difficult to get a negative reaction out of screwing up with the reputationist.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a smattering of reactions to you doing something they don't particularly like. Theirs is not about that. Theirs is influencing you into doing something because of authority, of experience. And I don't want to... And I think I already said this, but I want to be clear. Like, I'm not steering people away from this. We both merely want to highlight this is a strategy, and they're going to use it both to aggrandize you and to aggrandize themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there will become a time, oh, this is the thing to do, and the next thing you know, you're down three dots.
Yeah.
That's what's going
to
happen.
Exactly. But I do think there's, like, some little element of, like, you can sometimes maybe appeal to their ego.
Yeah, no, I
more,
agree.
More
I,
than
I
other
agree
types
with that.
Players. Like, everyone knows you're the best player around, so let's do something truly glorious for you that also involves me, but make sure that it really does involve you.
I would think that's the best way of ensuring that you're the one that they're going to work with.
Right.
I do think there's an appeal to ego that
right, works. Yeah. I'm saying if you do want to work with them, yeah. All right, moving on.
So the next one, a lot of people have a little smattering of this.
Mm.
And this archetype is someone that they just consistently do this, not just at certain times. They do it all the time. They're sort of like a con man, sort of like a fast talker.
Yeah.
Someone that
I call him the fast talker.
Yeah,
it's always been in my mind that way.
It's someone that is definitely...
Oh my gosh. Speaking of talkers.
They have a strategy, they have an idea, they have a thing. It's not a grand strategy, it's a turn-to-turn thing.
Yeah.
And they'll come to you, not necessarily at the end, but often at the end, when time, we got 2 minutes left. And they'll come by like, okay, I've talked to a lot of people, and here's what we have to do. You and I can do this. XYZ, PDQ, you go to Glacia, I'm going to go to Sevastopol, you support me into Romania, we'll put you into Budapest in the next year after that, it's going to work, no problem, I have it all set up, don't say anything, write the orders, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, they have all the tricks as part in their toolbox.
It's the three card Monty.
Three card Monty guy, yeah. Get to you with a totally different plan when they know the clock's about to go off in a minute and a half or something, so you don't have a chance to go ask anybody else about it before the orders are due. That's one fast talker move. There's the realize that they really don't want Germany and you talking right now, and so they're just going to take up as much of your time talking about trivial things as they possibly can.
Come up with a plan early in the... They also do this. They come up with a plan early in the negotiation phase. You guys talk about it for 2 minutes. At the very, very end, they pull you aside, spend 30 seconds, your last 30 seconds, to say, okay, I've really looked at it, and I've really thought about it, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And they say, but they take 30 seconds to do that, and you have no time to change your orders, or you have very little time to change your orders.
Or think about the implications of it, or whatever.
Or they do a slight tweak to what you have already agreed to. Like, they're really, the whole game here is to throw you off.
Yeah.
Like, whether it's just this turn, or every turn, or they're trying to keep you unbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole game. You won't see this with everybody else. Maybe somebody has a couple of these tricks up their sleeve. They might use it occasionally, but this archetype uses it constantly.
Another thing that you'll get from the fast talker every time is that whenever they do something against you, they'll spend as much time as you'll let them telling you why that was actually either A, the plan all along, B, better than the plan you guys had, C, something that they looks hostile now but was actually for your benefit.
Or D, you screwed up.
Or D, that wasn't the deal. You said you were going to do this, and so then me doing this, it made perfect sense because I thought you were going to do this thing.
Right.
And, oh, shoot, I walked into your dot by accident. I thought you were going to bounce me there. I thought that was the deal. You know,
there's a lot of words in a lot of space, and there's just a lot of justification and a lot of like, oh, that's your fast talk. You're like, oh, you're one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more than the other ones, this it comes in a lot of forms, and it comes in a... you can just see it. It ranges from anything from interrupting to confusing.
Yeah.
Like, it just takes all forms. And it's all about unbalance.
Yeah. They're all about just sowing, like... You get the feeling like you're just sitting and like trying to figure out your little theater and like, shit, am I better if Budapest is the mover or Romania is the mover, and like they're all the way over there talking to England and just doing all kinds of stuff, and you're like, what is even going on?
Right.
Like that, but
they talk to everyone every time, multiple times, lots of talk.
Yeah, like trying to screw stuff up, trying to get information, just trying to, like, yeah, just keep it, yeah, unbalanced, I think, is a good way of putting it. Like, the people who sort of specialize in just keeping everybody confused. Even their good ally, and then every turn they'll be like, you're my best ally, you're my good ally,
right.
and so we're going to do this, and then, like, the next thing you know, they're at 11 and you're at 6, and you're like, wow,
what
I really am a good
hell
ally.
Hell happened here?
I'm a really, really good ally.
Look how good I am.
Yeah.
Look how good I am. And so the only way, well, not the only way, one of the best ways to do this is to cut them off. Because, you know, whether they'll interrupt, don't let them interrupt. Be rude. Just say, I can't talk to you right now.
Yeah.
Or if they're coming to you at the last second, just say, we talked about this earlier. I have to write my orders. What we said stands. That's what I'm writing. And just be very, very firm, very clear, and stop them from talking. Walk away if you have to. Run away if you have to. It doesn't matter what you do.
Spill a drink. Just do something.
Whatever you have to do, because without the fast talk, they've got nothing. So you just need to be able to identify it, stop it, walk away. Stop, drop, roll.
You know. Spill a drink isn't bad, actually. Like, if you just can't escape this guy any other way.
Just drop your coke.
Just, oh, shoot, I made a big mess. Anyway,
I'm going to have to.
I'll catch up with you.
My orders are in anyway, so what we talked about.
Yeah.
And then walk away.
I might try that. There's one particular person I'm thinking of. I might try that next time.
So that's your whole game with this person. They're not, you know... It's also really difficult to work with them because... Mm. their whole game is just to keep you and the rest of the board unbalanced while they make gains.
Yeah.
So, likely
to tell a lot of little lies and not ever a big one.
Yeah, they're never really going to stab anyone. They're going to accidentally do things. But it's an aggregate that's going to end up doing quite well for them.
Yeah.
And it's never going to be something where you can really, really work with them. I'm not saying there isn't a short-term relationship there, but long-term, it's not like the strategist. The strategist you could work with long-term if you're in the right spot.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to think, God, how do you work with the fast talker? Some people do. I think probably the more passive people end up being the ally of the fast talker more often because they just kind of do what the fast talker says. That's okay for a while, but it's not
a winning strategy.
No, unless they actually catch the fast talker off guard at some point.
I suppose that's a longer term way of doing it.
Be a good ally for a while, and then when they've decided that you're totally complacent, stab them.
Right.
I suppose that could work.
Let me frame what I was saying differently. Yeah. You're never going to be a peer to the fast talker.
Correct.
You're never going to be on parallel with them. You're never going to be someone that they're going to take as anything other than someone they need to keep on balance, unless the strategy you just outlined.
Yeah. I suppose if they've made up their minds that, like, if somebody else hates them or something, if somebody else is just attacking them from the very beginning and they need an ally, you can kind of put yourself in a situation where you're like, all right, I'm going to be your ally, but here's the ground rules. You know, right. It's like,
violate the ground rules.
Right, exactly. I'm going to be your ally, but I get this, and I get this, and we're not talking about that. You know, that's the deal.
You fast talk this, we're done.
Yeah. I don't care what you're going to try and convince me makes more sense a year from now. We're doing this in advance. Like, they're probably a pretty good ally to have if everybody's attacking them.
Another scenario in which you can rein them in, like you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Anything where you can say, I'm in charge here. We're not going to screw around with any, like, constant changing of plans or anything. Like, you don't have to say it in so many words, but just make it clear through your behavior and your actions. I'm in charge here if we're doing this thing. And if they really need that, it can work.
Yeah, like, no, they know, this is a player that, you know, understands imbalance. They understand the whole point of doing that is to gain advantage.
Mm-hmm.
There comes a point in which they're very aware that if they keep doing that and the board is turning against them, it's not going
to
work.
Yeah, because it seems to me like a fast talker would be good at, when they have to be, being a toady.
Yeah.
A little bit. Just like, you're in charge here, you're the boss, I'll just...
Because you're essentially just waiting.
Yeah, right. They're just sort of like killing time until they've reconstituted to the point that they can go and do something else, and it might be spiteful to you, or until they can talk somebody else into doing something against you at the same time that they're working with. That's another thing. Is if you're their ally, they're almost definitely talking to your common enemy.
They're talking to everyone.
About like, they're the most likely to, like, let the plan slip to the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Just being like, okay,
so always talking.
Yeah, because we're going to, like, and they'll do it on purpose. Like, you know, like, okay, so you're supporting me into Munich here. And then they're the most likely to, like, go running across the room to the German and be like, Spart Munich.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that you never gain as much as they, like, their plans always work, but your plans somehow unluckily always fail.
Yeah, just, oops, oh, I can't believe someone figured that out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the fast talker is always, always, always talking. They're never at the board. They're the person that is never at the board by themselves.
Yeah.
Almost never. Like, so...
Yeah, and it kills them when they are.
Yeah, I know. Hates it.
Yeah.
Hates it. So, I don't know if we've gotten the best, you know... I think we've given enough for that one.
Yeah.
Like, how to identify... It's easy to identify.
I think you can tell
hard to work with.
Our personal prejudice when it comes to...
Yeah.
Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
Yeah, but if that's... I mean, if that's... I shouldn't say don't be that guy, because if you're trying to improve your own diplomacy game and you find that in your own games... You're a great...
Because it's super effective.
It really is. Especially when people don't know it's coming. It's like, I... The, I definitely remember games with these players at the after a tournament going, why did I agree to that?
How did you talk to all of those people? Like, they're the people that have had this grand, like, and it's not a grand strategy. It's a one move thing where they will have gotten five people coordinated somehow, five people to do this weird cluster of crazy crap, and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And who pops out with having it's the fast off.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Like, literally during a game, I'll just be like, why did I just tell him that?
Yeah.
Like, he'll be like, so, which of you is going to get Belgium in 1901? And he'll just be like, oh, I am.
Why did I say that?
Yeah.
So the last category is, I think, the most difficult to define.
And
I think, obviously, everyone has a little slice of this. But we're talking about players that really are pretty much trait on this. This is all about charisma. This is all about them being likable people. They're just like, this just seems like a good guy.
Yeah, because frankly, we like got through the list of all these other categories, and then we thought of a few more people that are like, why do they do so well at diplomacy?
Because they don't fit in these other ones.
And they have charisma, and that's the only answer.
Nice, they're likable, they're reasonable. They're not aggressive. They're not trying to sell you necessarily on a grand plan. They're not trying to, like, tell you that you should work with them just because they're really the best of the game. They're just people you like to work with. You're just, like, for some reason, it's like, ah, man, that guy was really cool. And like I say, everyone has a lot of good players have a slice of this. The people that trade on it exclusively, you just gravitate towards them. There's no real way to tell other than, like, you're not really sure why you're working with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it just seems like it's working and it's super pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the charisma player is, as nice as they are, they have a dark underside.
Yeah.
Like, they are just...
They want to win as bad as everyone else.
Oh, my God. They're just like, hey, let's have fun. Hey, this can be a great time. Hey, why don't we do this? Hey, why don't we do that? And they're willing to go with plans that you give to them. They're willing to submit plans to you.
Yep.
And, you know, things get pretty, you know, you're just kind of rolling along. You don't expect it. And suddenly you're down three.
Yep.
Because they just went, whoop, sorry. Mm. And when they do it, they'll be like, you know, it's just a game. It's totally fun. Yeah, chummy, let's go. You know, even when they're attacking you, they're as likable as all get out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And, it's not to say that anybody who you just like playing with is necessarily like a disingenuous person, but it's a disingenuous game that you're playing. And if the part that is going to get them ahead is that, like, you've been their buddy and their soulmate for the entire game, and then all of a sudden you're their dot farm, then that's what you're supposed to do in this game.
You know?
Like, and not everyone, you know, there's some people who are, like, too nice for their own good in diplomacy, and they won't take those stabs just because they're nice guys and they like you.
Right.
Or whatever. So, I mean, I guess that's sort of a way of dealing with, like, players like that. If a player's too nice, a player's too nice, and you should be their ally because they're too nice, and you should stab them instead.
Yeah, absolutely. But these are people that just have absolutely no qualms about doing that, but are just pleasant to work with.
Yeah.
And there's... Not really. They're difficult. They're very difficult to identify, I would say. Like, you don't really know that you're dealing with a person like this until it's too late.
Yeah.
And then they're not the reputationist. You just know them by reputation. Like, oh, that was fun, but I totally lost.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would say that these players definitely target people that don't know them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the trick only works a couple of times.
Sure. Yeah. The part where they make you feel like you belong for the first time. They're like, oh, you're new. Where are you from? What do you do for a living? Who's your wife? Blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about you. And then the next thing you know, you're like, what a great guy. And then he's really like, cool. And can I have Serbia? And you're like, yeah, sure.
You can have Serbia. You know, they'll definitely be like, I'll give you a little of this, tit for tat, you know, no big deal. I'm not the type of guy at work, play, you know. I'm not that type of player, don't worry about it, and then just...
Yeah.
And I think that the ability, what differentiates the charismatic player from just nice guys is the zero qualms and always looking for and playing you to get to that position.
Yeah. It's sort of tougher with this one than the others to say, like, any specific, like, what do you do to deal with it? Except, I guess, maybe be aware that other people probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know, like, other people want to work with this guy or whatever. Other people are loath to kill him. And so...
I would also say this is... I don't mean to cut you off, but I want it before I forget. There's the few women that play this game. They almost all follow in. They almost all fall into this category.
I thought of that too. Yeah.
The good players, the good female players, they fall into this category. Mm-hmm. You want to work with them. They're really nice.
Mm-hmm.
They're cold and calculating.
Yeah.
And they are playing it for all they can.
And then the guys who fall into that category, when they get on the board with the girls that fall into that category, they try and outdo them at it. And then that gets really weird.
It's actually pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's great.
Totally.
Like a female charismatic and a male charismatic, like going at it, it's hilarious. Yeah. They're just trying to, they're both trying to charm players.
Yeah.
It's
great. Each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about this? Anyway, I'm sorry I cut you off. What were you saying?
No, that's totally fine. I guess I was just going to say, like, a bad plan when you figured out that you have that guy on the board is to just go to your other neighbor and be like, let's kill that guy.
Yeah, don't.
Because your neighbor's probably not going to like that idea very much because your neighbor realizes that this guy's a nice guy. Even if you do want to kill the charismatic guy, you find a way of making a plan that includes him for a little bit. And then just sort of like edge him out or trick him in some
They're
way.
They're the most difficult to like organize an entire board against.
That's the whole thing that they're good at is like even if you have organized a coalition of five people to kill him, he's going to peel one of them off. There's going to be that one poor sucker who's going to somehow be like, yeah, no, you're right.
He's such a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
What did he do to you guys?
Exactly. And then that guy's going to do something sort of irrational and screw up.
And then another one's going to peel off. And then another's going to peel off. And then suddenly
don't bother. Don't bother with coalition building. Instead, just sort of like edge them out or trick them.
Yeah.
You know, like just sort of like understand that they're going to be there and kind of make them benefit less or just stick it in when you have a chance.
If you're lucky, they're one of the witches. Or they're easily your worst charismatic is in like France or Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're never going away. They're there for the whole game.
Yep, and they're down to three dots, and now all of a sudden somebody else is on board with some stupid plan.
Yeah, and they're like, I'm trying to do something here. And then it's just... Right. And they are also, I would say, the type of player that, like, they never give up.
Yeah.
The bully, the strategist, the reputationist, these are people that they might give up.
Yeah.
The charismatic never gives up. One dot left, still going at it 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know... It is completely possible for them to turn their game around.
Yep.
I have seen it more than a dozen times. Like, oh, well, you were at one. Ah, now you're at six. Ah, now you're at ten.
Yeah, and you're like, why didn't we just take that last one?
And they just charm their way into it. So there's no... I think you're right. It's really difficult to counteract with this.
Yeah.
I think reputation, knowing them, for them to be that player, that's why... If people have a reputation to be charismatic, they get killed
mm-hmm.
quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And of course, if you want to work with this person, that's probably the easiest of all of the ones that we've talked to. They're gonna pick their ally that they want. But if you want to work this, like people who are like this, just to get a little psychology for a minute here, people who are sort of the charisma player are probably extroverts.
Yeah,
you know that you don't get that way if you're secretly an introvert all along. You're probably an extrovert, and so give them the same back if you actually want to be their ally. If they're like, hey, I'm a nice guy and I want to be your friend and I want to know about your wife and kids, and ask them about their wife and kids, and buy them a beer and say, hey, this is great, this is fun.
The charismatic is
crack jokes. Do the works, like, because they're probably in it for that, right?
Yeah.
At least partially.
And I think they're less about absolutely dominating the entire board than just winning.
Right.
Like, they're just, I would say, I don't know. They may be less about the 18 than they are about topping. You know, whereas I think...
I'd agree with that.
I think that a lot of these other archetypes, they're really... Like, the strategist, for example, is all about the 18.
Mm-hmm.
That's the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
The fast talker is all about as far close to 18 as he could possibly get. The charismatic guy is about winning, like being, not winning is the wrong word, topping the board, dominating.
Or even achieving some kind of social goal while doing well in the game.
Yeah,
you know, like, I had a great alliance with Nathan Barnes. That's something I've been wanting to do. We both finished on 9 dots. That was a great game.
That was great.
Yeah.
That's the other side of this coin. They're hard to beat, but they're also not as interested in trying to win, I guess.
Yeah, if you can figure out, like, what pleases them and let them have that.
Yeah.
At least for a while.
Find that goal and, like... Yeah. I mean, this is something we've talked about a lot of times. Like, just as a general strategy.
The secondary goals.
But I think this is someone that's particularly vulnerable to working towards secondary goals.
Yeah.
So.
And cover your dots.
And...
I suppose that's just good...
Cover your dots.
That's just good advice for playing against any of them.
Yeah. You know?
Sure. Cover your dots. I think we've come up with 5 different reasons that these 5 different guys will just take your dots as soon as they have a chance. But... some more than others, I guess. I don't know. Like, that one's almost, it's hard to say these different personality archetypes. That might be more the player. Like, it's more like we had something a while ago where we were talking about, like, aggressive versus passive players. You know, sometimes you have to worry about that just as much. But, maybe it's almost like there's different dots you have to cover with the different personality types. Like, the strategist, you kind of have to cover, like, your gains. Like, make sure you're don't worry so much about covering your gains. Just worry about covering the places where he wants to be to eventually come around again to take your dots. Whereas the fast talker cover the one dot, you know, that he can accidentally oops into. I don't know.
I know. I think it's perfect. I mean, there's definitely personality archetypes. Like, there are people like you want to make sure your most vulnerable areas, your most important areas, like your home centers, those are more important to cover than your gains.
Mm-hmm.
And different archetype, completely different. It's all about position on board position and your gains and where they need to be. Other people are like, I don't really care about the gains. I'm just going to just break a stick off on this guy.
Yeah. I suppose, like, with some of the sort of charisma type player, there's times when you don't have to cover your dots, and those times will be when you're 100% certain that that person is having a really good time and likes the plan.
Yeah.
You know, like, you might bury your dots one time, take the risk that they're not going to take them that one time, just so later you can go, this is freaking great. Look, you remember that time when I left 4 wide open to you and you didn't take them? And then at that point, maybe you don't do it again.
Probably not.
But maybe they start doing that to you, and you can stab them if you're that sort of person. Absolutely. You know, like, because I know that ruins me. But when I'm in that mode where I'm like, great alliance, great alliance, great alliance, I'm leaving my dots open because I'm having fun. And thanks.
Well, hopefully hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah, we're done.
I think that we'd appreciate feedback on this. I bet people have a lot of other opinions on how we've categorized things. Also, I'm interested in all you people out there telling us who you think the players are that fall into these categories. There will be a prize.
And that prize will be...
named in the next episode. We'll see you next week.
Bye. You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks, everyone, for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead. Signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead... I am a giant 13-foot-tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye, everyone.